And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the first Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4, it is one of my favorite shows. It really is. And one of the older shows of Breakthrough Thinking, the Green Roundtable. I am excited. We have Eric Haas and Frank Clementi in studio. You guys are awesome.
Thank you so much, David. And we have a fabulous guest. And should I introduce him now?
No.
Okay.
Okay. I was waiting for you to do some host talk, you know, like, hey, how's it going? What were you doing in Flagstaff this weekend?
You got to ease Dave into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
Exactly. This is what I'm talking about. Eric knows.
This
is right?
some kind
fun.
Of wham, bam, thank you, man.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Radio show.
Now, how do you know?
He's been on like a year, right?
Yeah, I think it's been, this might be exactly a year.
Yeah, I think it is. August? Yes.
Yeah, it's either August or September.
Yeah, I saw him over at the show.
Yeah.
That's where
show.
I met Eric.
Yeah, what show?
The home show, Home and Landscape Show.
Yeah, how was it?
It was the big green show.
And yeah. he was standing there and he was talking about his architecture, and he had a bunch of pictures of some of his work.
Really? Now, yeah. When I think of green, I think of the Incredible Hulk. Remember that show?
I do remember that
yeah.
show.
You remember that back, far
Lou,
back. Eh?
Lou Ferrigno, right?
Yeah, remember? And even before, and then after that, I think they had
the Green Hornet. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but that could qualify. Wow, so yeah, that's right. You were on the show. Boy, that's time flies, right, Frank?
Yes, it
does. Of course, I've known you for like, what?
7 or 9 years, maybe.
Not eight.
Seven.
Did you say 79?
Yeah, what's up with that, 79? Okay, now you can introduce your guest. Not really. I'm just kidding. Okay, now, one last thing is that I want to see if this goes over as well as it went over on our last show. We had the bottom line with Mitch Spean, with a great pension consultant, by the way, Susan Hayek. What I said, if she's talking about lifespans and actuaries and so on, and you know how pensions tie into that. And so I gave my only example about that. I said, I met this woman once, and she said, if I was married to you, I would put poison in your coffee.
Uh-huh.
And I said, if I was married to you, I would drink it. Okay. So, all right. People love that. How come they didn't laugh? Kurt, I got a better response on this show. I'm going to say that every show and see who laughs the best. Eric?
That was great. It was good. Was
the delivery good?
It was impeccable.
Very good. Okay, since we're on these kind of stuff.
Keep it clean. We know you.
All right. Since we're on this, what two plants should you mix to get eggnog?
Eggplant.
And?
Nog plant.
Milkweed.
Oh, that is. Okay. Kurt, guys, was that as good as mine? Or
no, not as
Eric,
good as
do you have one or later on in the show?
No, I'm done, but I got to give you the kind of the head nod on that one. It was close, but
no cigar.
I think landscape humor only goes so far. It's like architecture humor.
That's exactly right. Okay, Frank, do the honors.
Okay, I'd like to present a good friend of mine who's been in the landscape maintenance and installation business for over 35 years in the Phoenix area. And his name is Frank Damone.
Not Vic Damone.
No, not Vic Damone, no. But he does sing.
Yes. Do you sing?
Actually, Vic was my grandfather's cousin.
Is that right?
Yes.
He's a great singer.
Wow. Yes, he is.
Fantastic singer.
He's still around, too.
Is he?
He lives in Palm Springs. Yeah.
Wow. Can you do a few renditions of
hum a few bars?
Fly Me to the Moon or something like that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, very cool. So and then Eric at 3:30, right? We're going to have
Larry Williamson on. He is from Earthco Mega Block. They do compressed earth block. They build machines, help out with that construction. And their company is a Clean Tech Open semifinalist this year, which is a national sort of green company competition. And I believe the winner gets $250,000 in seed money and some other things. But he's going to come on and talk about what he does with compressed earth block and talk about what he's doing for the clean tech competition.
That is awesome.
Sounds
wow.
great.
A semifinalist. Do you know when they pick the finals? Or
you know, I think they break the states down into 5 regions. In each region is, you know, 7 or 8 states. He's a finalist in his region. And if he – I want to say there's 8 finalist in his region, and if he gets picked as number one, then they pool them all together. They go out to California, and they'll make the final selection.
That is fantastic.
But he will know much more about it than I do.
Well, that sounds great. Looking forward at 3:30 to do that. Now, Mr. Frank.
Yes.
And Mr.
Frank.
Frank.
Frank. Frank. Frank.
Yeah, I didn't know which Frank I was talking to, but to be perfectly frank, it doesn't matter. Now, go ahead and let's start and ready to rumble.
Okay, we're going to rumble. Okay, we're going to talk about trees today. And Frank is going to present a couple of tips to people for our listeners on taking care of trees and selecting trees.
Wow.
And how we use trees in our environment and whether we use trees in containers. And we're also talking citrus trees and trees that we use for flowers and things like that.
Now, before we do that, we should probably ask Frank Damone.
Yes, Frank Damone.
Your background, because people think you're really a singer. So,
right now, no.
What is your background and why trees?
Well, I moved here in 1977 from Niagara Falls, New York, and shortly after that, I got a couple landscape jobs working for other professionals. And in 1979, I started my own business, Damone Landscaping, and it's a family-owned business. I have my son working for me, and it's grown into the a nice, lucrative, a business that's been good. It's been real good.
That's excellent. So the topic is trees. So tell us.
Well, he also, if I may speak for Frank here, that he also it's mostly residential, right?
Right. We do landscape maintenance, installation, sprinkler repair, and installation also.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. So he gives people advice on fertilization, you know, and pruning, when to prune the trees. And sometimes if they have a insect problem or disease, something like that.
Now, do you work a lot with, like, architects like Eric, where
I do a lot of work with Frank, a lot of work with Frank. We've been working together for about a year and a half now. And we've been very, very, very busy.
How about like builders like Eric?
No, not too many builders.
No?
So what's your favorite tree?
The money tree. It's
the
money tree.
Yes, the money tree. The money
I would like you to plant some of those in my yard if you can.
We do.
The answer is eggnog.
Eggnog, right. I like the ash trees. I'm an ash tree guy.
And what he means by that, if I may be your interpreter,
sure.
Is the evergreen, Chinese evergreen elm? No?
No.
What about
the
that?
Ash tree? Nah,
like
well,
a,
Chinese
like
elms
a Bradbury or Bradburn ash? Is that one?
That's one of the ash trees. There's Shamel ash, and there's a...
there's an Arizona ash, isn't there?
Yes.
Arizona ash.
Fantex ash.
My favorite is the Fantex ash.
Well, what makes those type of trees your favorite? I mean, what about those trees?
I like them because they get a... a nice size, maybe 20 to 25 feet. They get about 12 to 15 feet wide. You can have them in a controlled area. They're deciduous, which means they drop around Christmas time, which is our fall out here.
Do their leaves turn?
They turn a bright yellow and red. Okay. They're just beautiful trees.
So you're bringing some of that East Coast vibe kind of back to you in the desert.
Yes.
But I'm assuming it's not a native plant to Arizona, but it's a fairly drought-tolerant tree?
Correct. It does great in the desert here. And usually on the west side or east side where you want the shade in the summertime, but in the winter you want them to defoliate, and then the heat will heat up your home.
Now here's a question that I'm sure – might sound strange to all three of you since you're solidly in this type of business.
Not that solid.
No.
Okay, maybe not solid. However, a lot of people hear this type of...
Dialogue.
If you're, like, good to plants or trees and you're really peaceful and harmonious and you play music, does that help the growth of the tree?
Absolutely.
Okay, see, I think that's phenomenal.
Yes.
A lot of people don't
realize
that.
And Frank and I, we try to advise people to play certain music for their plants and trees.
So depending on the plant.
Tell us about that. I mean, Eric, you've heard that stuff, too.
I've heard it, but I always thought it was a myth.
Yeah, so did I. I wasn't sure. I mean, is that where they get the name tree huggers, where you're hugging the tree? No, probably not. Okay, not a good joke. Frank wins on that one. Tell us more about... how that works, and because I think it goes beyond just, landscaping and plants and trees. I mean, if it works for plants, it works for human beings,
Well, it works
too.
For people, too, because...
Give me Knuckles.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Go ahead, Frank. Tell them about the music.
Well, I think anything that's harmonious and happy is going to be good for your plants and for yourself. And I think anything like that can help a tree and people and...
Yeah, and it influences their growth. Now, if you play, again, I think we talked about this on the show before.
A little bit.
About music that's destructive, the plant could potentially die. While music that's harmonious.
Like rap music?
Well, I would
say, if it's a tree in New York, it might like that.
That's right. It depends where the tree was brought
up. It's a New Yorker tree. Huh?
So I want to know, because I am a little skeptical about the music for plants.
Well, wait a minute, Eric.
That's what I want to hear more.
Do you listen to music?
Yes.
Okay. And you have favorite music that you listen to?
Yes.
Okay. Now, doesn't that music put you in a certain mood?
Yes.
Like green leaves. I love that music.
Yes. when you go to a movie, why do they have music in movies? Because it sets the scene,
yeah,
it puts you in the mood.
Heightens the moment.
And heightens the moment, like Gone with the Wind. You know, it's a famous theme.
What is that theme music for Gone with the Wind?
I don't remember it.
Then why did you bring it up?
Because...
Okay. I'm just kidding.
It's not that famous.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Okay. Yeah, Kurt, can you do that? Oh, you can't do it.
Can you play it, Kurt?
Okay, so keep going. I like this.
So what happened? Right. So you're... I mean, and even say you're out with a girlfriend or something or your wife. Let me put it this other way.
Oh yeah, put that out there. Thanks a lot. Can you beep that? Is it 8 seconds already gone? Right. Oops. Okay.
So and you play certain music. I mean, we as single people, you know, when you were single, of course, you did that. You played certain music, and you said this is going to create a relationship and harmony. And so
are you saying
it affects our neurological system?
So it's almost like when you're happy, you treat your plants better, and that's why they're happier? Or are you saying that...
Yes, they pick up your vibrations, that's correct. But we're talking about music.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about music, but...
I think I need to see some further in-depth studies.
Well, we can drive down any Phoenix street and see the people who talk to their trees and the people that don't, if you look at their front yards.
As a matter of fact, Frank and I went to see a lady about maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and she showed us her roses in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And the roses were the most magnificent, beautiful roses in the summer. And we asked her, what do you do? She says, well, I talk to my trees, I send them my love, and so they respond. So now there's an example of a person who's actually done it.
Now, would that be, you know, like we do LEED certified homes and that stuff, and there's all these LEED points. Do you think we could reduce our water usage if we talked to the plants more and played them more music?
Well, I think we could do that with people first and then get down to the plants.
There you go.
So the key is this. You mentioned you can drive down any street and notice who's really taking good care of their plants or talking or maybe playing music. What are some of the signs? What do you see when you drive down a Phoenix street that would indicate this person, this particular house,
well,
is not...
Well, you can just see with the general care of the yard and the trees, if they're getting any, you know, water. And if you're not watering, number one, especially in the desert here, we're going to have trouble with all the plants. And the people that are taking care of their property, you can tell that it's a much... happier yard.
I think you need to look for those little fake rock speakers in the front yard.
Yes.
If you see them, then you know it's going good. It's
a happy yard. You've been searching the internet too much.
And I was going to take a break. I think I will. Anyway, and when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the Green Roundtable. We're talking about trees. We have Eric Koss, Frank Clementi, and Frank Damone in studio. We'll be right back.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starting, Eric. I said starting. I meant to say starring. Did I say starring or starting?
Starting.
Okay, that's what I thought. We're going to have Eric Koss start. And, of course, starring Frank Lemeni and Eric Koss. Actually, you know, we should do a little brief intro. We didn't do that. A little bit about Eric, 30 seconds worth, and Frank. And then we'll get back to Frank Damone on trees.
Well, I'm Eric Koss, and I'm the owner of Koss Design and Koss Design Build. We're an architecture and construction company that specializes in sustainable design and building.
Excellent. And Mr. Frank?
Frank Clementi. We do full-service backyards, which includes furnishings, lighting, planting, maintenance, color coordination, materials selection, and on occasion, makeup advice.
Makeup
They're
advice?
Branching out.
Makeup as in makeup? Or
as Eric said, we're branching out.
You said make out, didn't you?
No, make up.
Oh, okay.
In other words, we make up stories.
That's okay, there you go. All right, back to trees. So we talked about how nurturing helps, music, how you talk. Frank, back to you.
Oh, well, the other idea is using how you prune a tree. It's like, you know, a lot of people, when they train their kids, they train their kids in certain ways because they want them to have certain habits. Well, a person who does pruning will train a tree to have certain growing habits and certain patterns. So, Frank, tell them a little bit about how that works.
So what we do is we assess the tree and where it is in the yard and what we want the tree to do. Do we want to get tall? Do we want to get wide? Do we want shade? Is it for looks? So a lot of times we'll go in and we'll selective prune a tree. A lot of times when I get phone calls for trees, they're already pretty bad. You know, very seldom do I get a tree right from the beginning and I get to prune it how I want, except when we do the installation. So a lot of times I'll sit with the customer and actually ask them what they want this tree to do shape-wise. And we get in there and we thin it out, we selective prune it, we tip it back, depends on what we need to do. Get rid of the dead. If we've got any branches that are laying on top of each other, going the same direction, we'll thin that out. We want it to be more, especially this time of year with the monsoons coming, there's trees down all the time because these trees just haven't been pruned. They're like kites instead of being able, the wind to go through the tree comfortably and keep the tree up. So
there's an art to pruning, and the way you do it is depending on what you want the outcome to be.
Correct. And all my guys know how to prune correctly. Wow. And we're getting a lot of phone calls for trimming out trees right now.
And the other part, too, is watering. How you water a tree and where you place the water. Because when you water, you want to water deep so that the roots go deep. Otherwise, when the wind comes by, it knocks the tree off.
Right, and what we do with the tree, as the tree gets older, we're going to move the drip line further out to the weep line, which is the outside of the tree. And instead of keeping it right by the trunk, which I see all the time, you start moving it out further to the outside of the tree.
One of the interesting things that if you want to know how far your roots are underground, mm-hmm. you look at the tree. And if the tree is 25 or 30 feet wide, the root system is a mirror of that underground.
Right.
So that's a good way to get an idea where your root system is.
And I have some trees in the central quarter that I water for 8 hours at a shot, because we want that water to go all the way down, because a lot of they're 100-year-old trees in the central quarter.
And another thing, too, that we run into a project that we're working on now is if the soil has too much clay, the water doesn't percolate or drain through down to the root system if you have the emitters on the surface. So what we do, we would have these pipes that go down about 2.5 feet or no, 18, 20 inches, and we water deep down. So you can control the growth of a tree, the health of a tree, and its longevity by how you water.
How you water it, yep.
Do you ever move existing trees very often?
No, I don't. There is it's called a Big John, which is a giant spade. It's a three-sided spade that some companies have that can actually move a really big tree. I don't have that capability.
When they do move it, do they just come in and scoop it up and take it out, or do they have to dig it out and let it sit for a while, or how does that work?
This is what they do. They dig the hole where the tree's going to go first. They're going to fill that hole up with water halfway. They're going to let it percolate down. They're going to go to the site to pick out the tree. They dig the tree out. Immediately it comes out, and immediately they bury it as soon as possible, and then they water heavy. Because you're going to get some droppage from the leaves, because it's going to go into shock, because we are cutting some big...
So is there roots. Ever, what came to mind is survival rate. I mean, are there times that trees just can't get accustomed to their new home?
On the ones that you transplant, yes, there's always that.
Yeah.
None of the trees that I plant ever do
that. But that is a possibility, right?
But it is a possibility, and the bigger trees.
Yeah, the bigger the tree.
The harder it is to transplant.
It is. Yeah, the more costly, too.
Yeah.
And you can't be covering a 30 or 40-foot tree for frost protection either.
No?
No. It's about 30 or 40 feet up in the air.
Well, what is frost? What happens with frost?
Well, it causes, it reduces the fluid flow inside the tree, and it freezes it, and so it can't survive.
Oh, so how do you, what's the preventive?
So the idea was to be able to cover the tree and protect it from the cold air. But when you get to a tree that's 30 or 40 feet, it's impossible to do that. That's okay with small trees.
Like all the ficus trees had a hard time this past winter, and they froze back. The bigger trees froze back maybe 6, 7, 8 feet.
Oh.
And now, you can't.
How about the certain geographical locations? Do they get accustomed to that, like trees in like back east or in the Midwest?
Well, all the trees we got here, they're trying to... Like a queen palm. People are bringing queen palms in here, and they really have a hard time here. It's too dry. You know, they come off the truck from Texas or Florida, and they're all nice and humid and everything. Then they put them in the ground here, and then they're dry. So that's one of my biggest problems is trying to keep queen palms looking nice.
So do they actually die, or they just don't look good?
Both. They get fizzle top. Like right now, all the queen palms... With all the winds, all the crowns are getting busted out of them. If you drive down the street and you see a queen palm, the middle crown where the fronds come up and out, they're bent over. They didn't kill the tree, but it just doesn't look very nice.
So how about for people with desert trees in their own yard, when's the best time for them to prune them and cut them back or kind of
thin them out? I like cutting
them out.
All my desert trees in February.
Oh, okay.
I go in and just thin them out. You can only take about a third of a tree out at a time.
So it's right after the winter,
right
sort
after
of,
the winter.
Sort of. The heaviest winter.
So you want to try to do it then when you think there's no more frost coming, and then go out.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And usually that's March 15th, but I just like thinning them out in February. And you keep an eye on them. But even now, all those trees I trimmed out in February, I have to go back and thin out a little bit. Not as much as I do in February, but...
Now, Frank, you might tell them the purpose of pruning. I mean, what does it do for the tree itself, other than for looks and stuff like that?
Right. And what you're doing is you're thinning out all the bad wood, giving it a proper shape, make it more appealing to everyone around it. You know, you're getting the canopy at the right height that you want, if you're going to walk underneath it or if you want it to grow to the ground. It's just all the stuff that needs to be done to these trees, we try to.
Now, there is such a thing as invasive trees. There are some trees that will take over an area. They take over a forest, and we have to be careful of that. One of those trees is the paulownia tree. That is a very invasive tree, and it came from China.
What does that mean? I mean, it takes over. Does it kill other trees?
Yes, it does, David. It kills other trees, and it doesn't allow them to grow, and it destroys an ecosystem.
So how does it? I mean, how does that happen? How does it kill a tree?
Well, no, the tree destroys other shrubs and grasses and things like that, but mostly other trees.
Won't go around. The other plants won't grow around it. The oleander. Oleander is pretty invasive, and there's a lot of stuff won't grow near an oleander. I mean, if there's in the central corridor, there's, you know, 20-foot-high oleander bushes, and there's citrus trees that are actually growing away from the oleander because they don't want no part of it.
Really? I mean, what is it? I'm trying to get a better understanding of that. How, what are these particular invasive trees do to make other trees move away?
They take over all the nutrients in the soil.
Oh.
They take over all the nutrients, and they invade, and then they prolific certain, you know, intense.
Well, how do they get there? Do you have to plant it?
Yes, mostly this is a man-made situation, but it also can occur natural. But most of it is man-made.
Wow. Eric, did you ever know that?
No, I didn't know. I'd always heard about, there's one type of bamboo, I think.
Yes, the timber, like, one of the bamboos.
Okay, yeah. And they call it sort of a... There's types that are runner bamboos, mm-hmm. and then I know those can kind of take over, and sometimes once they go, they can go anywhere, right?
Yes.
But I hadn't heard that much with other plants, so.
Wow.
Yeah, any plant can be invasive, any plant.
That's incredible. They're like, you know, like wives. Anyway, all right, when we come back from our break, we'll have another guest. Of course, we'll have Larry Williamson from Earthcoal Building Systems. He's on the line now. We'll be right back. Frank DeMone, thank you so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That was really interesting, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clementi. And again, thank you to Frank DeMone for very interesting tips on trees. A lot of people really don't know that. I had no clue. And the invasive trees was really interesting. I had no clue about that. See, even outside of human the human nature, there's invasive type of plants and trees and other interesting things.
Well, and I'm going to do my own music test on my plants at home. I'm going to pick one plant out. I'm going to scream and yell at it on a daily basis. And I'm going to try another plant. I'm going to give it some love, and we'll see what happens.
You're going to have jealousy and civil rivalry, whatever that's called.
You might try that on your wife and see what happens.
No, we don't want to go there.
We want to be nice to our wives. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we've tried that. Okay, so anyway, Eric, you have a great guest calling in, I think from Texas, perhaps, but maybe.
Yeah, he's coming in from Texas. Gosh, I hope I get this right. I think he's from around Amarillo. I haven't checked that part, but we got Larry Williamson. He's here with EarthCo Mega Block, and he works with compressed earth block, amongst other things. Are you there, Larry?
I'm here.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I'm great, but it's extremely hot here in Texas, as I imagine it is there in Phoenix.
Oh yeah, how hot is it out there?
Well, my thermometer right now is saying 112.
Nice.
Ooh,
wow, that is Phoenix-like weather.
Is that a dry heat?
Oh yeah, we haven't had rain for months here.
Yeah, I know. You guys are in the midst of a really bad drought right now, aren't you?
An exceptional one, yes.
Yes.
It's statewide, and extends well beyond the borders of Texas.
Oh.
Exceptional drought, exceptional heat.
Yeah, I think I had read it's like the worst in 20 or 25 years so far.
Oh,
right
is that
now.
Right?
Yeah,
oh,
so it's pretty bad.
Well, actually, we've surpassed the worst in the Dust Bowl, and
oh my
going
gosh,
back to 18 and 96, we're in the worst dry spell we've ever had in recorded weather history, I guess.
Wow.
All right. Well, congratulations on that record.
Yeah. Yeah. We're real fond of that one.
Yeah.
The charts are up on that.
Are you out in Amarillo? I couldn't remember. That's where you're from, isn't it?
No, you got me a few hundred miles northwest. I'm actually I live in Ranger, Texas. It's a small town in north central Texas between Abilene and Fort Worth, about half distance of those two.
Are you a Dallas Cowboy fan?
Yes and no. When they do good, I'm a seasonal. Actually, the last few years, I haven't had much time to follow them, but I still root them on, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. America's favorite football team.
That's right. Well, hey.
Well, we hope to become that again, maybe.
Yeah, really.
Well, tell us a little bit about your company and what it is that you guys do.
Oh, I'd be happy to. We're actually a new type of construction system, and we are compressed earth block technology.
Oh, compressed earth.
But we're a new form of it. It's a new methodology. We say we're a next generation regenerative construction system. And
that's a mouthful.
What we're trying to do. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some people would.
If you look at.
I was just going to say, some people say, oh, you build with dirt. But what you said sounded a lot better.
Well, we do build with dirt. I mean, and, you know, if we look back in history, a few hundred years, you know, dirt dominated everything. It
yes.
was the, in fact, half the people on the planet live in some form of dirt construction right now. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we've lost a lot of the ancient technologies that were really good construction technologies that built with dirt. And we've kept a lot of the poor, which, you know, dirt is... It's the most sustainable material on the planet, bar none. I mean, if you look at the availability of earth around the planet, you know, it's everywhere. And it's being renewed every day by Mother Nature, breaking down rocks and, you know, everything. And, you know, it's local. That's the main thing. It's right there under our feet, and so it doesn't make sense to haul building materials in for hundreds or thousands of miles away when we can build better with what we've got right under our feet.
So how did you get involved with compressed earth block? What made you think that was a real direction that you wanted to kind of dedicate a lot of your time and energy towards?
Well, my last paying job, I worked as a project manager estimator for a very large hazardous waste cleanup company. I worked as a project manager bidding Superfund sites and cleaning up toxic waste, you know, in the ground. And so I got really tired of cleaning up messes and decided that what I wanted to do is prevent the messes in the first place and come up. And I'd always been interested in earth construction. In fact, I ran my own construction company for 25 years before that and put in mainly gas pipelines and fiber optic cable and did a lot of construction work in earthen dams and dirt roads and things of that sort. But I knew that, you know, earth was the best material to build with. And I spent about 10 years studying all the earth construction methods around the world, and it always came back basically the same thing. Earth is a great material, but we can't build really economically with it because of the high labor intensity required.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we've got small block CEB out there, and it's a great construction process. Now, let me make one point here. I'm not knocking any earthen construction system because they're all great. And it doesn't matter whether it's rammed earth, cob, CEB, they're all far superior to anything wood, concrete, or steel that we construct with.
So you're in favor of earth products in general is what I hear you saying.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But when we look at how we build in and around the world, we do it mostly with companies that one company is churning out a lot of housing. I mean, you know, most people don't go out and build their own house. We're not owner builders anymore. We have a few, and I applaud those people. And they use the other earthen forms because they are furnishing the labor to build that house. And so it's economical. And if you can furnish your own labor, absolutely. Build it with small block, build it with rammed earth, build it with cob. Any of the other earthen construction systems are the way to go. But if you're talking about high production output, and we need to be building the majority of our houses out of earth because of the energy savings we would get. And so to do that, you've got to churn out a lot of houses quickly and economically. And so what I've done is basically take the principles of Henry Ford's assembly line process and mechanized it, and Einstein's keep it simple maxim. So
we try
to do everything as simple as possible and mechanize it to the highest degree. So when I started this, I said, first thing I've got to do is deconstruct a house, you know, an earthen house. If I was going to build an earthen house, what would I want? Well, I'd want massive walls to get high thermal mass in the house, and I would need to be able to put it back together in a modular form. And how would it be, what would be the simplest way to deconstruct one so that you could reconstruct it? And what it comes down to, you know, it's modular, just like plywood is modular. And the larger the units you make, the simpler the build becomes because you have much less
labor.
Operational forces necessary. So what we're doing really is, you know, and I love playing with toys when I was a kid, and one of my favorite toys was the Lincoln Log playset. You took a few little wooden blocks, stacked them up, and you had a house or a fort. And I said, you know, if you could do that with giant earth blocks, you could make houses that way. So that led me into another side, which the technology didn't exist to build giant earth blocks. So I had to invent the technology, and I've spent 4 years now proving it up at Texas Tech University and build demos around the country. And we think we've got it. It's not perfect. It's in its infancy, but its potential is huge. We think, you know, we can bring a machine on site and put the dirt in it and at the end of one day produce a 2,800-square-foot house, the wall system.
So
and we can do it.
Larry, your concept is you take the processing of the of creating the home to the site.
Absolutely.
I mean, normally when you have wood studs, the studs come over, and then the crew comes on the site and they assemble the house, let's say a home. But in this case, it's something similar. You take the production capability, you put it on the site, whether it could be an apartment complex, it could be commercial buildings, or it could be housing, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely. See, by doing that, you're eliminating the shipping cost. And, you know, shipping is about 40% of the cost to build a material.
Mm-hmm.
It's involved in getting that wood or that concrete or that steel to the job site. And of course, it goes all the way back to the manufacturing and everything. But shipping is so, energy intensive, and manufacturing so energy intensive. If you look at, say, timber frame housing, you know, 60% of our timber right now is coming out of Canada. The rest of it's coming out of the north, northwest United States usually, or the south, you know, depending where it's from. But it's being shipped a couple hundred miles to the sawmill. It's processed, a very energy intensive process. Packaged, cured, which, you know, you got to cure wood. Nowadays, we throw it in an oven and bake it for a few days instead of letting it sit out 6 or 8 months. And then we stick it on a train, usually, and we ship it a few thousand miles to a regional distribution center. Then we take it off of there and take it to a retail place. And a contractor comes in and buys it, and then we load it back up, and we ship it again. Well, you know, each one of those steps is eating up energy like crazy.
Not to mention all the packaging and the off-gassing and all that goes along with it.
Exactly. So if you can build a factory and put it on a trailer and take that factory directly to the build site, then we've eliminated 99% of the shipping cost. It doesn't exist because we're taking the local earth from there. And, of course, that's not possible all the time, but most of the time, you're going to be able to get earth within a 30-mile radius almost 100% of the time. And so you're getting it down. Now, of course, earth is very heavy, so you certainly don't want to ship earth very far. But if we can take it if it's a large site, and remember, most of these construction projects and development nowadays are, you know, several hundred acres or thousands of acres and involve hundreds of homes or up to thousands of homes. In that situation, that developer, I guarantee you, he's got his building material on site, and it's free to him if he just realizes it.
Now, you don't dig a big hole and then you build a building on it, right?
No, we don't want to do that. But you know, every site nowadays, especially, you've got to have water,
wastewater
containment, retention ponds. You dig swimming pools. We dig basements. We level these sites and move generally mountains of earth around these developments. And that earth is already being moved somewhere. And if it's suitable, it shouldn't be moved off-site. In a lot of cases, the developers are actually paying to dispose of that earth. That earth is their building product.
So what do you say that there's probably a lot of people out there that are listening to this and going, wow, a house made out of dirt or soil or whatever you want to call it. And then plus, you know, there's people like me. I'm an architect that likes using lots of natural materials and exposing those materials. Some people like that. Some people don't. What kinds of finishes can you do with a material like this, or what will a house look like when it's all done?
Well, right now we're concentrating on being the internal structure of the house, you know, replacing those tubifores or CMUs.
And all the insulation. And so,
well, it depends on the situation. You know, here in Texas, we're kind of in the moderate. Now, we're usually not 112 degrees. We're usually in about the 105 range. But we've got a few structures here that we don't have insulation on. We have no air conditioning in them. And so far, they're staying down into the low 80s at the most in this 112-degree temperature we got. And, you know, we don't have enough houses built to really know how they're going to work because, you know, in houses, these structures are one's an environmental education center for Girl Scouts that actually won a presidential award for the little girl that dreamed it up. But they're not being lived in like homes, you know, per se. So we don't have that exchange of people going through the doors and raising the windows and stuff like that. So we're just getting in that phase. But we know from past experience, you know, the old pueblos and the missions around the country that it is possible to build with massive walls. And if you do passive solar design, you can, you know, accomplish most of your cooling and your heating through design and use of high thermal mass walls. And, of course, insulation is important, especially the hotter it gets or the colder it gets. Generally here in Texas, we don't need too much insulation because heat's our problem, and these houses tend to stay pretty cool. But I can see up above Kansas and north, you wouldn't want to insulate the outside because it would probably cool off faster than you could pump heat into it, I mean, naturally, with a passive design. Now, if you want to put a solar-powered mechanical assist, then you can build them anywhere, and they should be, you know, almost zero energy at that point.
So what about the finishes? Can you leave the block exposed? Do you stucco it? Talk about the different things that people are doing with them.
Interior, we suggest earth plaster. It can be left exposed, actually, interior, where, you know, you don't have any weather damage coming against it or weather threat. Now, we don't like to put anything as far as emulsions, like asphalt emulsion is used a lot of in Adobes and Portland CMS used in, to stabilize small CEB. We don't recommend that at all. We want to stay with a closed-loop material cycle. So we don't want to put anything in the block that would, in a sense, waterproof it, because we believe that you waterproof the outside layer.
What about lime? Would you add any lime to your mix?
I like lime, yes. Lime is fine. Anything natural, lime, fly ash, byproducts, there's plant polymers, and this stuff is getting better all the time as plant chemistry is, you know, these guys in nanotechnologies are inventing some incredible insulations and paints and stuff that are natural but are going to do an excellent job on earthen blocks. And so, you know, like I say, we're just in that infancy. But as far as the coatings on the outside, you could do anything you could do to a typical house. I mean, you know, typical adobe is mostly stucco or left exposed. You know, use the same stuff on ours. It could be bricked, rocked, painted.
Larry, a wide variety. Larry, the other questions that comes up is, you know, the standard question, molds, moisture, all these things that people can complain about or have to deal with. What are some of the qualities of this block that you have that offset some of these situations that people encounter in stick-built or wood-frame houses and things like that?
Oh, yeah. We've got some major advantages there. When you start looking at earth construction just in itself, you know, of course, it can't burn.
Right.
Insects don't eat it. And if you're building a solid wall like most small block CEB or rammed earth or R block, you don't have any place for a rodent to live. And mold doesn't grow on it because it doesn't have organics in the wall, mm-hmm. you know, to support it. Now, if you sheetrock it or do something like that, you're adding an organic compound that or a glue that the mold could grow on. But in and of itself, our large blocks cannot support mold growth. And they breathe, so they do absorb moisture, and that is one of the benefits of having a very large block, is because that moisture is adsorbed, AD instead of AB, adsorbed, where you're absorbing water molecules when you absorb something, but when you adsorb it, it's going into the chemical matrix and it's locked in. And most clays have the ability to lock in about 50% of their weight in water vapor without becoming wet. So If you've got a block that weighs a ton, and our blocks typically do weigh right at 1 ton each when we set them in the wall, and it's, say, 25% clay in that block, you know, you've got almost 500 pounds of clay in there.
Yeah.
So that 500 pounds of clay can absorb, theoretically, 500 pounds of water without becoming wet.
Now, do you need a footing or a foundation for this, or do you use the earth as a footing?
Yes, by code it's required, but we have built experimental. The Girl Scout house is one of them that has no cement in it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It was built on packed earth, waterproof liner put down, and then the blocks put on top of it, because the blocks are two-thirds the strength of concrete when they cure, and so you're putting concrete on concrete, basically. And as long as you have, you know, every concrete footer in the world that's built is either built on top of rock or compacted earth.
Right.
And if the earth underneath that concrete gives, that concrete's going to give itself. So the key is getting the earth underneath the concrete packed, and then really you could eliminate the footer. But right now, we do have to have a reinforced concrete stem wall under us.
What?
And, of course, that's no problem. But in the future, I think the codes will change depending upon the locality and the material that you're building on.
How thick of a wall is sort of the minimum for construction? And what do you recommend when you think about insulative values and that?
We're building with our little prototype. We call it our little prototype machine. It builds a block that's 18 inches wide, 12 inches tall, and it's infinitely variable in length. And we generally try to get around 10 foot to go to the wall, which weighs right at 1 ton. And I like that 18-inch wall. You put that up, you've got an 18-inch thick compressed wall, and then if you put stucco on the outside, you may have, you know, an inch on the outside, and if you put earth plaster on the inside, you may have a half inch to an inch of earth plaster on the inside. So you end up with something like a 20-inch wall. And from everything I've read in passive solar design, most people agree that 22 inches is kind of the minimum you shoot for, you know, and you would, and the more mass, the better. So that's kind of where we're starting, and in our test as far as compressive strengths and impact resistance, you know, I thought a long time ago we'd be building 24-inch and 36-inch thick walls, kind of like rammed earth, you know, like I say, more mass, better. But as far as strength-wise, 18 inches is far and away enough strength to build any structure, any home in America. I mean, we've done impact tests with these walls and 18-inch thick walls, and we shoot an 8-pound brick at it at over 700 miles an hour, and it bounces off.
Wow. How about the interior walls? Are you doing any interior walls with it?
I do recommend some interior walls. I don't recommend all of them be interior, because you're going to give up a lot of space when you put an 18-inch thick wall in an interior. But the thing about building at least one or two interior walls 18 inches thick is that wall mass is completely removed from the outside air temperature. So it is going to want to stay really cool or warm, whichever way you want it. It's going to want to stabilize around 68 degrees. And there's enough mass there. It takes a tremendous amount of energy to move it from 68 degrees. And so it's going to be like a giant buffer in the middle of your house. And so if somebody opens the door and, you know, 100-degree air pours in, that heat has to be absorbed. That inner wall will suck that right out real quick. And so you don't have to have near as much mechanical air conditioning. We're looking at reducing mechanical air conditioning loads by 70 to 90% without insulation. And if you add insulation, and you can actually get almost, well, 90% plus with passive solar design.
Larry, so the wall, the interior wall that's made out of this earth material becomes a heat sink. In other words, it'll store the coolness. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. That's what it is. It's just like a giant battery.
Mm-hmm.
And once it settles, and you know, the earthen temperature about 4 feet deep all across the southern United States is about 68 degrees when you go 4 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
So these earthen walls kind of tie into that. They, you know, the stem, your stem wall and everything, if you don't insulate the bottom of it, it's going to tie into that earthen temperature. And that wall, what we've found is, you know, we take our thermometers and check our wall temperatures, and generally they're trying to stay 68 degrees. And the outside temperature, you know, brings it up slowly. But what happens is heat moves into the wall, and then the outside cools off. And generally heat's going to move back outside the wall to the outside temperature at night if it cools off enough. Now, these temperatures where we're having 112 in the daytime and 85 at night, then that wall is definitely going to absorb and retain some of that heat. And the more massive that wall is, though, and the more of it that it was at 68 degrees when it started, of course, the longer it takes for it to heat up.
Right.
Well, Larry,
and it takes a tremendous time to heat it up.
Thank you, Larry.
Larry, first of all, nobody likes 112 degrees, whether it's a dirt wall or us. But we only have about a minute here for you, and I just wanted to give you a chance to say briefly what you're doing with the Clean Tech Open in your company.
And your website,
oh, okay.
Your website and phone number.
Yes, we entered a little contest, it's a contest called the Clean Tech Open, and it's the largest green or clean technology in the world contest, and it's for green entrepreneurs like myself. And so it's a big business contest, and we're a semifinalist in it. There's about 137 companies left in the United States in the contest, and they're in different regions. And they'll pick a final list out of each region, and we go to California for the finals. And anyway, we're very excited about that. I think we have a pretty good shot maybe of making it to the finals. We're trying anyway. But anyway, my company's name is Earthco Building Systems. My website is earthcomegablock.com. And we'd love for you to go have a look at us.
And Larry Williamson,
we are the future.
Thank you so much for calling in to the Green Roundtable. Thank you so much. We'll have you back on again. I thought that was interesting.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry. That was great, Eric. Quickly, your contact, and Frank, your contact.
You can reach me at www.costdb.com or 602-374-5757.
Frank Clemente, Clemente Design, Sustainable Landscaping, 602-540-3773.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Frank. Frank Damone, thank you for being on today, and we'll see everyone tomorrow on the Sports Show. Got a special guest, Jackie Callen, the First Lady of Boxing, will call in. See you tomorrow.